Ah, yes.
Ah, yes.
We are live.
Oh, here we are.
Live and in living color.
Dang, yes, we are.
So, for our second episode of mm-hmm. The Chase and the Truth, I'm really excited to share Mike Gonzalez wow. with you all.
Number two.
That I know as Mikey.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All family knows me as Mikey.
Yeah. So I think what people don't realize, and I think it's because we're, you know, Mexicanos, we're from the Valley. Mm-hmm. So it's our family, our cousins are not necessarily all related.
Nope.
So anytime I introduce you, I'm like, oh yeah, my cousin. And they're like, wait, from what side of the family? And then it's
listen, it goes a little bit deeper than that. It's not by blood, but we're blood, but it's not.
But it's not, right. Yeah. But we've known each other.
Yeah.
So the story is.
Yeah. Tell everybody what the story is, because it's kind of cool. Yeah.
So the truth is your dad, mm-hmm. actually, well, I guess let's say it this way. I would not be here if it wasn't for your dad.
That's right. It's a weird way of saying it, but yes. Yeah. If you, okay, say this one. That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. So your dad introduced my parents.
Yeah.
In the day. And
he's playing Cupid for a little bit.
Yes. And so, and then, I guess, fast forward and mm-hmm. here we are.
I know.
We didn't really, I mean, we grew up together as like, my best friend, Jenica.
Yeah, which is my first cousin.
Your actual cousin.
Yeah.
And I feel like between that and then your parents, and we're just kind of all adopted into one big family.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. Shout out to Abel Gonzalez being Cupid. Yeah. That works.
Yeah, and you have such a big family, and they're all so loving, all your sisters. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to, it's funny because we grew up in the Rio Grande Valley.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then, you know, we're all here in Austin or in the vicinity. Yeah. And so it's just nice to have a little piece of home here.
Oh, it's the best thing. I mean, I wish my sisters live here. They come and visit and we hang all the time, yeah. But they don't live here. So soon they will
so
be
it
here.
Seems like they are.
Yeah.
But really, so that's just like the foundation of how we actually know each other. Mm-hmm. But through that, I've known you as a person. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Yeah. You texted me 2 days ago. I was like, hey, can you do it now? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's
I'm
do
like,
it.
You're on my roster, but actually, I need you tomorrow. So
put me in, coach.
Thank you for coming in today. Yeah. But it's actually so cool to see because we talked about this. I said, you know, we're going to have this conversation today on camera that mm-hmm. we had a couple weeks ago. Because I feel like every time we get together, it's not often, but then it's for hours.
It's for hours. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm really excited just to kind of break down your success that you're currently seeing. Oof, right. Yeah. But really like that's the Mike Gonzalez, the drummer, right? Mm-hmm. And I know Mikey.
Yeah.
And what it's taken to get there, right? So mm-hmm. just kind of tell me your backstory. I guess let's dial it back a little bit.
Okay.
How did you even start getting into playing the drums or playing instruments in general, and then the drums and then taking it seriously? What was that timeline like? And then we'll just build from there.
Yeah. I guess I've always kind of felt that I was wanted to be a drummer. You know, when I was a kid, we'd go to Living Way and I'd see like Tara and all these guys on stage. And I was like, man, I want to play.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, I wasn't able to play at the time. There wasn't enough room for them. So I thought, well, I guess I'll just figure it out on my own. I ended up playing sports for a bunch of years until I got to sixth grade. Sixth grade is when I started band. I found percussion, I guess. You know, it was like I learned how to read music. I learned how to hold sticks and stuff like that.
Well, and for the record, you were mm-hmm. the kid that was always like tapping on.
I wasn't a bad kid, but I only ever went to the office. Like I only ever got sent to the principal's office by doing this. When I was done with work and I would bother everybody else and the guy's like, all right, go get out of my classroom. And that's the only time I ever got in trouble. I'm a good kid, guys. I'm a good kid. Yeah. But yeah, so that's where it initially started in sixth grade. Let's see. I did that. I never had a drum set until I was a senior in high school, though. So I did all the marching percussion. Texas is huge for marching, marching band. So that's how I kind of like gained my chops in my hands and learned how to read music and all of that. So I took, once I found the drum set, I was my senior year of high school. I had been begging for this kit.
Yeah.
And he finally was like, okay, cool, I'll get it for you. In the summer of my junior, the summer of my junior year, going to senior year, my grandfather and my dad gifted me with a DW Black Sparkle drum set that I still have to this day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I still have it. It's in my shed. I don't use it a lot. It's more, it's mostly of a sentimental kit now that stays there, doesn't leave.
They never, when they stole your stuff, and that they didn't take that?
They didn't take it. Yeah. A couple years ago, like right after COVID, I had a break in my shed, as what you were talking about. And luckily they didn't take that. They for some reason they took a bunch of shoe boxes that had like memories of mine in them, which was weird. But I think it was like a smash and grab.
Right.
So they went in, just grabbed a bunch of shit, and then they grabbed a conga that was like super personal to me. My mentor and teacher Fausto Cuevas pretty much gifted them to me, right? And he stole that. Whoever it was stole one of them.
No.
It was I mean, it was after COVID too. It was a big thing. So I never got those back. But they didn't. They didn't take any of like my actual instruments that you know that I've had since I was a kid.
Right.
They took memory. Like they took signed baseballs that I had. From like Morgan Ensberg, the third baseman for the Houston Astros, I had a signed baseball.
They're like, this is worth bucks.
I don't think, to be honest with you, I don't even think they even knew what was in there. They just saw a bunch of shoe boxes underneath the table. They completely ripped everything from under there.
Wow.
Old drum magazines, which actually that kind of sucks. Like, looking back, it's like, man, it was like when I started playing drums, I started buying Modern Drummer magazines to read about. You know, who played on these records or what drums did they use on these records and all this stuff. And that was more of a sentimental loss to me, but it wasn't the actual kit. If it was the actual kit, oh, dude, I would have died.
Oh.
I would have died. I mean, it was literally a gift from my grandfather, from my grandpa and my dad.
Yeah. Well, that's really what kickstarted
my entire career.
They probably didn't buy that sooner because they wanted to make sure you were serious. They're like, let's just see if you like.
Absolutely. And I didn't, and I wasn't really... Like I was into marching band and classical percussion, but it was like I was just doing it so I could learn how to play drums. Essentially, I wasn't gonna do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah,
I love classical music, but I didn't see myself playing in a symphony. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can do that, and percussionists make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
In those areas. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not what I saw myself do.
So when did you have that dream of like, I actually want to make this a career versus like, this is fun, it's a nice hobby, I could probably play at a couple bars?
I think it was after I got that kit. The summer of that year, I went to set it up. We had a buddy of mine who, well, actually he wasn't really a buddy, but he was a student who graduated. He was a senior when I was in eighth grade. He graduates. I come in, but he was like the best drummer at Pace High School before I got there, and was the best drummer for the entire time he was there. So funny enough, Brownsville's so small that my dad knows his dad.
Thanks for wearing the 956.
That's right. Day. I gotta represent. His name's Joey Ansaldua, but my dad knows his dad. Obviously. My dad knows everybody. And he was like, hey, my son's interested in taking some drum lessons. Got him to come over to the house twice. He gave me two drum lessons.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. He brought over a book and some CDs and was like, I already knew how to read music, so we kind of went through all that stuff. I was trash, horrible. I had never done anything like with my feet and my legs. It was always just classical percussion, timpani, mallets, stuff like that. And he showed me how to do it. And I was like, okay, cool. I think I can do this. And then I just never stopped after that. Yeah, it was like I knew exactly what I was gonna do for the rest of my life, right there. And then a couple months later, I met my mentor Fausto Cuevas, who at the time was on tour with Stevie Wonder.
Wow.
Yeah, still plays with Stevie, plays with J-Lo, Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Tina Marie. He's played with everybody, and he's also from Brownsville. I know.
Crazy. Well, actually,
crazy.
The last time we talked, I was just thinking about all of the serendipities. I'm like, you got to write this down and then eventually turn it into a book. And that's why we're documenting today.
Right now. Exactly. Exactly.
Right now, because there are so many, call it serendipities or blessings along the way, because that's really what's led to your current success, you know? That is so cool.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And well, he had come to Brownsville. He was on break. On break with Stevie. Comes one of the drum instructors in Brownsville was his drum instructor, and he set up the whole thing. Like, he came and did a master class, and I was interested in taking the drum set lesson with him because I had just started playing. And he had gone to Berkeley to study percussion and drum set, ended up studying with, like, heaviest of the heavies. The greatest conga player to ever live. Wow. Was his teacher, Giovanni Hidalgo. And then he studied with a bunch of people. So I pretty much asked my dad, like, if he's giving lessons, like, I would love to take one.
Yeah.
And we made it happen. Like, I remember sitting in another drum set teacher in town. He was hosting it at his house. He takes me over. My dad takes me over. I spent an hour with him kind of reading, and he was just kind of seeing where I was at. Mm-hmm. And obviously I hadn't, I just started, so no skill whatsoever.
Yeah.
And he...
Like, I'm ready to learn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I told him. And he had me play a little bit, which was not good at all, and just to see where I was at.
Yeah.
And then he goes, so what are you listening to right now? Like, what are your favorite records or stuff like that? And I don't even remember what I said. Like, I was just like, Michael Jackson or, stuff that. And he was like, well, I need to introduce you to like, jazz. And I had no idea what that was at the time. That's not that's not something that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up with Earth, Wind, and Fire and Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with Miles Davis and right. Ornette Coleman and all these other guys.
I'm a little bit more well-rounded.
He opened the door to this whole new experience, I think, for me, musically. And he had me listen. He showed me a record called Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. Jimmy Cobb on drums. It blew my mind, essentially, because I'd never heard anything like that before. It's like cool jazz. Like, Miles is just in the cut of everything.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy Cobb playing the most simplistic thing, but making it swing so hard. He goes, you need to learn how to play like this.
Wow.
And I go, whoa, holy shit.
It's going to take standard.
He set the biggest standard.
Yeah.
He set the biggest standard. And then
remember how old at this point?
I must have been 17.
And you're how old now?
31. Yeah.
I knew the answer, but for the record.
She's family. She knows exactly what's up.
For the record, grind. That's when the grind started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That opened up a whole new aspect of, whoa, this goes even deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like the initial, like, oh, shit. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm all about this. And then I just never stopped after. Like, I'm kind of glad my parents get to see me do these shows and these get to experience all the things that I'm doing. They're now.
You're number one supporters.
Absolutely. Family. My entire family.
Always.
Always.
Even when it wasn't great.
This is what I'm saying. So, like, at that time when I first got that kid and I'm starting lessons and starting to experiment and develop a relationship with this instrument, they endured so many hours of me just like clean clank clong clean clank, like there was no method
to
it.
Honey, he's gonna be great. I just know it.
They did it. They had no idea. I had no idea. I just knew that I found something that I just wanted to do, and I just never stopped. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've watched you, I think we operate the same way. That's mm-hmm. why we've become so close. But that's been the dream and the goal. And, like, that's, you're going to do whatever it takes to chase that.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of what or who comes into your life. Like, you know that this is your anchor.
Ooh, we're going to get there.
We're going to get there later. Maybe part two.
Maybe part two, right. We're going to have to bring it back for another round.
Yeah. But anyway, just keeping that as the forefront, right? Mm-hmm. And that's been your anchor and your guiding light, I guess, like throughout the couple years.
Yeah.
Over 10 years.
Yeah.
You've been at it. What was how did you end up in Austin here?
Yeah.
And then in the circuit here? Because, I would say LA is probably a better area for you to be in, maybe. I don't know what that looks like musically.
Yeah, it honestly just depends. Like, I felt like, so I had a couple different options. I graduated number 3 in high school, so I had open. So
he plays the drums and he's also smart.
I'm it's listen. Let's so I'm not I'm 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 smart. But there was a lot of kids that were way smarter than me in high school, but I just worked harder than them.
Yeah.
I did my home. Like, yeah. It was just, I just.
In your homework.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's what it was. But also, like, a lot of kids that were smarter than me also didn't have opportunities that I had with my family. So, you know, sometimes they had to go and take care of their family.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't come to school.
I feel that. Yeah.
It just, you know, that's kind of Brownsville, yeah, at that time. And still kind of is. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the smartest kids that I knew back home never got to leave.
Yeah.
Just, that's, it just so is what it is.
Yeah.
We're blessed to be able to have been able to, you know, afford a college education and be and have that opportunity, yeah, to go. Right. And I took it. I wasn't gonna stay there.
Yeah.
I kind of knew when I graduated, I just, like, I felt like this, if I'm gonna do music, this isn't the place to,
right,
be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But going to that, after those couple of lessons, it was inspired, and I did the rest of the year practicing. And I remember telling I probably said this on a bunch of other podcasts, but I told my grandparents, or my grandfather in general, I told them, hey, I'm gonna do music this is what I want to study. And he goes, mijito, I don't know. Like, he's all about security and family, yeah, and, like, sure, how are you gonna support a family, and mm-hmm, how
let's
you gonna
think
do all this?
This, hold on,
absolutely, yeah. And he's
logical
100%, right? And he's the smart, yeah, still to this day, he's 86 87, he is the sharpest, smartest brain that I know, the, yeah, person that I know. Still.
And sweetest.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And he had me think through everything. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I made sure, and I took some time to mm-hmm, I mean, also, I'm like 17 or 18 at the
You're
time.
Like, what
so
family?
What do I know? Right. Yeah. I just want to play drums, man. Right? Pop, just let me play drums. Yeah. But I came back and told him, I was like, look, there's no plan B. This is what I'm going to do. And this, it's going to take a lot. And the thing is, for him, and I kind of explained it to him like this. When I graduated, he understood the fact when I told him. But I was like, Grandpa, you made this. He owns an entire company, mm-hmm, on his own.
Successful in his own.
Absolutely. He did that with my grandma, just them two. They built it from the ground up. Mm-hmm. All my tios and tias, my dad, like, they all worked, or still do. My dad doesn't work for him anymore, but all my other tios and tias work for him. And they built it together with, mm-hmm, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
A legacy, a little dynasty.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's what I want to do,
right,
in a different area of, mm-hmm, you know, of craft. Mm-hmm. You know, you figured your stuff out and you worked hard and you did it. I want you to trust me to do that same thing, mm-hmm, in my area of study, or in my, you know, in my craft.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think after that, he was like, okay,
yeah,
let's do it. Let's see what you can do. And my parents were the same way. And all my tios and tias, they're like, ay, mijito, I don't know. I don't think so. You just started playing. It was also because I started so late.
Right.
You just started,
yeah,
playing. Do you really think you can go and
you
do that?
You have the unfair advantage at that time.
Yeah, but also, like, I wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just an extra level of, like, because I started so late, I've always had this kind of chip, mm-hmm, on my shoulder. It's like, well, I want it more.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And it's helped me so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are like, man, you don't ever take breaks, or you don't ever do that. Like, no, I don't. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I just want to yeah, be good at this craft.
The last podcast that we did talked about, when you're reaching a level of success, it literally is an obsession, like,
oof,
an insane obsession,
yeah,
that most people, I would say 99% of the people, mm-hmm, could not relate to, right? It's like the 1%, yeah, of, like, you eat, sleep, drink, breathe drums.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm, I mean, from any time I'm talking to you, it's like, oh, I got to go practice, or I have this, or I have that. But it's all related to drumming. And, mm-hmm, then you got to eat. And,
yeah,
then you got to work out.
It's all, it's,
it.
Yeah, all my schedule is revolved around that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, actually, funny enough, these past 2 days haven't been revolved around that. Cause I got, yesterday, I was in the shop. I was in the tattoo shop.
Yeah.
I got two tattoos. Shout out to my buddy Eeyore. He, you know, got some new ink.
On the guns.
On the guns. Right there. And then I got a new drum right here. Anyways, so yesterday I spent 11 hours in the tattoo shop.
You're like, who am I?
Yeah, right. And it was cool. It was like every now and then I was like, fine, okay. It was great. We had a blast. I didn't think about drums at all.
I would say that's like your downtime.
It is. It is my downtime.
You never take time off. That's like a little vacation for you.
It was. It was.
So now you're mentally refreshed to give it all you got today.
I love it. Give it all you got. Give it all you got. Give it all you got. That's what I want to do. I'm going to give it all I got today. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
On the show.
Yeah.
But
I was just going to say, going back to that thing. So drums is my main focus of every day of every week. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So like here and there is everything. Everything else ebbs and flows in between that, which is why, for some reason, my career seems so crystal clear. Mm-hmm. But sometimes relationships and other stuff doesn't seem quite so clear to me.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, it takes away that recently that has taken away from more of the relationship side of things, which is, you know, maybe that's not the right thing for me right now. So I'm just trying to stay focused.
We've talked about that. This might turn into a dating podcast right now. But we've talked about that in the past, you know, and it's hard. And I would say like just dating in general is hard. And then and especially being in Austin. But also while you're pursuing hard after career, it's just really hard to find balance, you know. And I always say, because people are like, you need balance in your life, and balance is great, but I think when you're pursuing something great, it's actually a really good sign that things are out of balance. And so sometimes we have to embrace that, because if things are out of balance, that means there's growth in some area. And so right now it's okay that there's growth in career, right? Mm-hmm. And one day there'll be growth for both of us in relationships.
That's what all of our talks end up becoming. It's like, how are you? How are you? Great. But also, I need your advice on this. Yes, exactly. I need your advice on this.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Both of us. You and me both. Yeah.
Yeah, always. But you know what? Enjoying just the life.
It's great.
But going back to, you know, pursuing that career and pursuing greatness, and because that's been your priority for the last, call it over 10 years, right?
It'll be 13 years in August.
13 years. Yeah. Dang. And not just kind of a pursuit, not like, oh, I kind of want to do drums. This has been 13 years of like, I am all in, right?
Yeah.
And I know, so then you went to, ending up here in Austin, you went to UT.
Mm-hmm. With you. That's right.
And I think that's when because I knew you. I mean, we're not that far apart in age. I'm 34, but you were my best friend's cousin. So it's like, oh yeah, my best friend's cousin, right? Yeah. Like growing up, and we'd all hang out or whatever. But I think when we were both in Austin, that's when we got closer.
Yep.
And graduating from UT, and then you just saying like, yeah, I'm gonna do drums, like, awesome, bet, like, do it. I remember, you know, just supporting you at like the smaller little venues that are playing, like, I'm gonna play here, let's show up, you know. And nobody saw those moments. Mm-mm. Right, of you going through the grind.
Nope.
And then the serendipitous moments that have happened. Talk to us about what has happened, the different people that have been placed in your life along the way to put you on right now the biggest platform, which is playing for the Kill Tony show.
Yeah.
And for me, naively, I'm like, oh yeah, my cousin plays for this podcast comedy show, Kill Tony. They're like, what? You know, I was like, oh, really?
Yeah.
But it's become such a big platform for you. And I know that you're using it for big purposes as well. But at the same time, there is a whole season of your life that people didn't see. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about what that looked like.
Yeah.
And how you ended up on this big platform.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long one too.
Yeah.
So let's just start in college. Like, when I went to UT, I don't know if you were there. Jen came with me to my audition.
Yeah, no,
Jen
did it.
Yeah, you were probably in Austin, but Jen and my cousin Matthew, they both came with me to my audition, and they sat with my mom outside both rooms. So leading up to the whole audition process, I didn't know that. State schools in Austin or in Texas, you have to, when you want to be a musician or specifically jazz drums, you have to audition on both classical percussion and jazz drum set. Oh. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Originally, UT wasn't even my first choice. I wanted to go to Berkeley. I got a scholarship, but it was only $12,000 a year for a $50,000 a year school. Plus, like, living off campus, because it was too much.
Yeah.
And my dad and my grandfather were like, sorry. Stay here. If you stay here, we're good. Okay, cool. So my second choice was UNT in Denton. Something happened with my EID information that when I was trying to apply for the music school, they didn't give it to me in time to audition or to even sign up for auditions, because you have to sign up before. It was
for
this
UNT.
Weird for UNT.
Okay.
It was this whole weird process that I was like, well, I missed the audition, so fuck me.
Yeah.
I'm not going here. Yeah. And I was kind of pissed off. I was like, yo, like, I'm interested in your small school.
Right.
Like, help me out here.
Yeah.
And it didn't end up working out for the right reasons.
God was like, slam that door.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, 100%.
Wow.
100%. And UT was my third choice. Came here, auditioned. They were like, okay. Well, I applied. They said, here's your audition date. You're good for the school. So I came in February of 2011 before I started. Or maybe it was before. I can't even remember. But I get there not knowing that this school, you need to audition both. I had nothing prepared on the classical side. Had no idea.
Actually,
Berkeley's
I
audition.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
You probably do. Jen probably had something to say after that. Because I was so like sad after that.
Yeah.
I was like, man,
That was my opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. It was. And I was under the impression that when I went to Berkeley, all I had to do was drum set stuff. Hey, so we're going to put some stuff in here. Can you sight read? Show me what you prepared. They played a little bit with me, grooved back and forth. Okay, cool. Yeah. Here's what you get. At UT, it wasn't like that. I did the jazz. My first part of the audition, I jump in with Jeff Helmer, who is at the time the head professor. He was a piano professor, but he was the head of the jazz department. I had my audition with him. He sat on the piano. We played. I played what I had prepared, and then him and I played back and forth with one of the older students that was there. That went great. So much fun. He came out and told my mom, I was like, you know, your son has a good chance of getting in. Like, straight up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Confident.
Yeah. So all we have to do is you got to go into the other audition. And that's when I was like,
what?
Yeah. I didn't know about this. So I,
what'd you do?
I waited outside the percussion room, just kind of like twiddling my thumbs, cause I was so nervous.
Did you Google anything?
I just kind of played some like Texas all-state music that I had learned months ago, like maybe 3 or 4 months before. And I hadn't practiced that in that
3 or 4 months.
So once I did that audition, I was like, all right, I don't need this anymore. I'm going to play drum set for the rest of my life. I get there and I just like, I mean, it felt like a kid who has never played these instruments before.
Oh my God.
Nothing prepared. They had me play probably, they stopped me at like maybe 8 seconds, 10 seconds. I remember the feeling of like, I started shaking at this point. I was like, they just don't want to hear me. And it's true. They didn't. They had me play snare drum and mallets, and you had to like do some other tambourine, triangle, and then timpani stuff. And they were like, no, I think we've heard. It's like you go on American Idol. They're so bad. And Randy's going to be like, that's going to be a no for me, dog. That's going to be a no for me. That's what it felt like. I was so embarrassed.
Wow.
I was like, I walked out with my tail between my legs.
Going back to that like frame of mind, when you're that young, you're like, this is all I've got. This is my ticket. Because if you want to play professional drums, how else are you going to get there?
Well, for me at that point, that was the only way.
That was the ticket.
That was the only way.
So then what happened?
So I come out of the room.
Out of here.
Yeah, pretty much. They're like, okay, cool. We've seen enough. Thank you.
Wow.
Okay. Well. Hey, thanks.
Yeah.
So I walked out with my tail between my legs, like super sad. And my mom can see it on my face.
Parents know.
Yeah. And it was a horrible feeling. We ended up, you know, going out to dinner for the rest of the night.
I'm
like,
sure
okay,
your
whatever.
Stomach in your
it yeah, was
heart I, in your stomach.
I still remember, like, I still remember how I feel.
Yeah,
those moments in life, I think, don't ever go away because you never want them to happen again.
Yeah,
it's like a failure that at that point I wasn't in the mindset of like you need to fail to become stronger, mm-hmm, to learn from that and become a better person and a better musician and yeah, everything. I didn't know that back then.
Right,
you learn that as yeah, you fail. So that was that. I think that was probably my first big fail in my career, yeah, essentially. So. We go back to Brownsville. Probably a couple weeks later, maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, I get this big, it's like a UT letter from the music school. And I'm like, oh shit, well, here it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, cool. I yeah, open it. And it was like all mixed feelings because one side said I was so good. The other side was like, we don't want anything to do with you. I open it up. And of course, it's like, sorry, we don't think you're, you know, we can't accept you at this time.
Wow.
Okay. That's, and I just knew, I knew what
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
So plan B, there wasn't really a plan B, but I was like, I'm good at science. I like biology. I like hunting and fishing. So I ended up studying, wanting to study marine biology. So I was a bio major for my entire freshman year.
What? I didn't know this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your freshman year, you were a bio major?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. I didn't take any music courses for the first freshman year of college.
Wait, did you still pursue music then?
So that's, yeah, so that's where I'm going with. So like I was taking calculus, chemistry, bio as with all these other like pre-med students that I have nothing. It's not that I have nothing in common with them, but my focus was to do this.
Right.
So I did what I did. I studied hard and
they're all like in their classes. Yeah, I'm going to be a doctor.
Absolutely.
And you're like, I'm going to be a drummer.
Yeah. And they were like, well, what are you doing? 100%. Yeah. They all had this. They were like, why are you taking like actually hard classes? And it was
because you're actually smart.
Well, once again I just worked hard
yeah,
for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I studied and it was cool. I had a good group of people, a group of friends my freshman year that actually made that year really fun.
Yeah,
you know, we studied together, we were all living together at the mm-hmm, same time, so that part of it was really easy. The hard part was, okay, the next audition, if you want to, you know, mm-hmm, try again for the music school, is going to be in December of 2011. Okay. So I have 3 months to prepare the shit that I suck
yeah,
at.
Yeah.
And I did just that.
Wow.
I figured out a way to get into the music school to, you know, get into the percussion department to try and practice as much as I could. And I, those same etudes that I had done in high school that I had just like tried to pull from memory.
Yeah.
I got that same sheet music back and I worked that up until December.
Wow.
Every day. And with a little bit of like, I don't even remember if I played drum, like was even able to get into the drum set room at that year. Cause I hadn't met, so Wayne Salzman was my teacher after that. I don't think I had met him yet.
Wow.
Or maybe I'd met him once in the audition. I can't even remember. Anyway, so that whole semester was just biochemistry, calculus, and then focusing on how to get back into the music school. And that it was pretty tough. So tough that I was like, yo, I can't do this calculus shit.
Yeah.
I was failing. I mean, from the beginning, I was like, I don't even fucking, why do I need to do this? What the fuck?
I'm not going to do
yeah,
calculus.
Yeah, I had a buddy named Steven who was incredibly smart, super smart from Katie. He was like my guiding star in all of my classes, to be honest yeah, with you. We took all those classes together. And we became really good friends. I studied with him. He was kind of like my tutor in a way. Where all week we would study, and then on the weekends he would like fucking party hard, and then still get
oh man I
a plus like
I aced. Envy those people, like how
it was insane.
I'm with my flashcards.
Absolutely, like he went so hard during the week that yeah, he was just like fuck all this shit, I'm going to party yeah, all weekend, and did came back on Monday and then aced everything. like everything.
Those people are another level of brilliant.
Another level. He's probably a doctor right now.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But I stuck with him to the like so much that I just didn't have, I didn't want to put time into that anymore because I needed to do this. Mm. So I ended up dropping that class and at that point, I was technically a part-time student. I only had 12 hours because I was only doing the like sciences that I needed to get done. Because if I wanted to get into the music school, I didn't need calculus to fulfill that degree or whatever.
Yeah.
So I dropped it. I was like, well, fuck it. I'm going to use that time to go to the music school and shed even harder.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. 3 months, did that. And in December, like on the audition day, I remember kind of being nervous, but not, you know, I remember waking up and I was like, okay, today's the day.
Nerves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was like, I'm either supposed to be here or I'm not.
Mm. Yeah.
I wake up and I was living in Jester.
East or West?
I can't. I think it was. No, it was Jester West. I definitely was living in Jester West.
Cool kid.
Yeah. That was only
Jen and I were
in the East.
Yeah.
I know. She told
it in the East.
Yeah. But the East. So we were in Jester West first year. It was still like from the 1970s. Yeah. Like everything was old as shit. And the following year, my roommate Pete and I, we moved to Jester East and it was all brand new.
Yeah.
They renovated everything. And I was like, yo, this is the cool shit, dude. Oh, like we have lofted beds. You just missed it too. Well, I mean, not really. Like you're 3 years older than me. So you missed it by like a couple years because they had just renovated it you all were seniors when they were renovating.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, so I remember waking up, took a shower. It was kind of getting in my mental mind, like mental prepared, like my mindset prepared. And I'm walking over and I'm listening to music and this song came on by Dwayne Woods, Let Go and Let God.
Mm.
Wow. It was the most emotional point in my life still to this day. I remember walking, I'm listening to this song, and I get on, like I finally get to the music school, but I stop, and there's this point in the song where he's like, yeah, you just need to let go and let him do his thing. And I prayed. I remember praying.
Wow.
I looked up, I said, if this is right for me, let me know. I'm gonna do my best no matter what. Let me know if this is my path.
Wow.
And I went in there and I fucking crushed it.
Wow.
And the next day, literally the next, I know it gives, I remember how I felt in that moment.
Yeah.
Let go and let God. I had already done the work.
Yeah.
So show me the way.
Yeah.
Man, it's what happened. It's crazy.
The last time we had a conversation, we were talking about a lot of those little moments along the way and praying into them and then seeing God's divine intervention. Mm-hmm. But like you said, the only thing that you can do is prepare.
Yeah.
But and then you leave the rest up to God. But that gets me so emotional because that was a pivotal moment.
It was the biggest moment that at that point, after all that happened, the next day I get in. I felt like I did great. I get in and I prayed again. I was like, all right, I'm all in.
Here I am.
Use me. Let me know what I need to do. And I've just been doing that ever since, as hard as I can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time we talked also, you talked about how there are so many other drummers out there that might be
way better than me. Oh, absolutely. I mean,
than you to
by
be on
far.
The platform that you are right now.
Yeah, that's I definitely struggle with that a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that term called? I forget, but anyway.
Imposter syndrome. 100%.
Same way.
Yeah.
You're like, am I really supposed to be here? Like,
yeah.
You see all these other people, but talk about, because dang, that was one moment, and you're like, God's like, okay, it is my will for you to be here.
Yeah.
You're like, got it. I'm gonna keep working. And then there's so many other little stories, but talk to us about the most recent one with getting on the Kill Tony Show. Just because we only have maybe 15 more minutes here.
Dang, time goes by fast, huh?
I mean, when you and I talk, it's like hours.
I know.
4 hours.
I know. We go to lunch at Home Slicer at 16:18 and we'll be there for 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, I got work to do.
Wait a minute. Who's been calling us? but I remember you telling me the story about Kill Tony and then just the plans that you have, because you've now tasted a level of success, but you've been so humble, and you continue to remain the Mikey that I know, even achieving this success. And that's really hard to do. And you're like shocked by it too.
I'm
you're
so
like,
shocked.
What is happening that people, you know, and I love that about you because you don't let it, you know, get to you. But talk to us about the little story leading up to the divine interventions of how you even ended up on the platform for Tony. And then just talk to us about the success and your plans that you have, because like you said, your grandpa had set a standard, and your grandparents are incredible people, and obviously like, I've been a part of the family enough to know what they've created and the legacy and the dynasty that they have. But you have that same passion as well for your career and doing something that really uncharted waters drummers haven't done today. Not at the level that you want to accomplish with you and your family, that you know, that I know. So tell us about that story and talk about that.
Well, first off, I got to thank John Dees. John Dees is, he's the musical director and the MD for Kill Tony, the leader of the band, the leader of the Kill Tony band. He's the one who has given me opportunity, like the most opportunities of probably anybody here in town, I think. Essentially, like, him and I met, my best friend Andrew Schindler and I, once we graduated, well, not even once we graduated, when we were in still in college, we would go out to all these jam sessions. And he was the one, John was the one running a lot of these jam sessions. Like, hey, let's get together and play, like, on a, like, kind of what we did last night. We were at the gallery last night kind of doing the same thing. But back then, he was running them, and we met, and we just became friends. We would come out every week, and then we'd meet people, you know, we'd start to play with other people who'd come to those jam sessions. And we just got close over the years. In 2017, the Peterson Brothers asked me to be their drummer, and sure enough, he was playing with the Peterson Brothers at the time, so we got to play a lot in that circle, too. And then, you know, did a couple years, probably a year and a half, or a little over a year and a half. In 2019, I was actually in Alaska on a cruise ship, coming back from a cruise ship. I was with my ex-fiance at the time, visiting her, and I'm on my way back, and he texts me. He's like, yo, you ready to get this GCJ work? And I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, GCJ? Is he talking about Gary Clark Jr.?
Wow.
And I was like, bro, are you talking about Gary? Because he, so a couple months before that, he had become, like, Gary brought him on to be his MD. So, like, he's playing all over the world, opening up for Foo Fighters and Guns N' Roses and doing all this crazy shit. And they, at the time, Gary was coming off the road and doing a bunch of shows in Austin, ACL, two weekends at ACL in 2019, and then two nights sold out at Stubbs Amphitheater.
Wow.
So he was like, yo, I want you to be a part of this. I want you to come play percussion.
Wow.
Fantastic. Dude, let me check my... Oh, I'm free. I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay? Hey, thanks.
Check my calendar.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was... That's where a lot of this Kill Tony stuff has started from this moment. Absolutely. Yeah. So this happens in 2019. I remember going, like, as soon as he told me, I listened to, he sent me a set list. I listened to all of that, like, whatever was on the set list, and then all the rest of the stuff that was on the records. The record that he was touring is This Land, Gary's record in 2019, or 2018, I can't remember. Sheila E. plays drums on all of that record.
Wow.
So I went and studied as much as I could at the time. I wasn't necessarily a percussion player. I was playing drums, but when somebody asks you to do some shit, you're going to fucking learn how to do it.
Right. Yeah.
So I did. I listened
to that. Was the principle that you learned in college.
Well, actually, I learned that when I was a kid. Like, I playing sports, I think my dad had me playing sports since I was three. I played baseball since I was three, probably all the way up until I was 18 or 19. Maybe a little bit more because I played it a little bit in college. But that, like, understanding that if you suck at something, you're just going to do it until you get better.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the mentality that I took to doing all this music stuff. So when I'm put in a position that I have no idea what I'm doing, I just figure it out.
Yeah.
the music's going to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. Now, developing the skill on whatever instrument that is, that might be a little bit different.
Right.
But I can understand what she's doing. Now, how can I bring that same level of sound? Mm. So he calls me in July, at the end of July. I take the entire month, not the entire month, so probably like half of August and the entire month of September. I bought every instrument that was on those records.
Wow.
I wrote it down. I probably still have it in my notes. I go, this song has this, this song has this, this song has this. Cool. I looked at that notes and I kind of put everything together. This is what I need. This is how much it's going to cost. Okay. I went to Tommy's Drum Shop. Shout out Tommy's Drum Shop. I bought every percussion instrument that I needed. Wow. I found some congas. I borrowed some from somebody that I needed. And I set up this whole crazy rig, which I have pictures of.
Wow.
Still to this day. I set up this whole perk rig in my drum shed, and I learned everything verbatim, or as much as I could.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of synthesized drum parts that are electronic. I made all those parts or all those sounds myself, essentially. Right. I could have gone to the producer to get them, but I ended up just like, well, fuck it, I'm just gonna do it myself. So I figured out how to make these sounds, these samples. Put them on the pad, set up everything, and for a month and a half, I sat there listening over and over. I probably didn't even play drum set as much as I was doing that. And I listened to that music so much that, you know how at the end of the year, Spotify goes, "Hey, these are the songs these are the songs and records that you listen to." Every category was just this land, wow. All of Gary's music, all of it.
Wow.
So I was like, man, I fucking did some work on this, huh? Yeah. That was the first time that I was like, wow, I over prepared.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do when getting called for something like this.
Oh yeah.
You
that level.
You have to.
Yeah.
I memorized everything. I knew all the drum parts too. So like what Johnny Rattle, that was a drummer at the time for Gary, what Johnny was doing, if there was a little time to improvise, we could. Because I knew exactly what he was doing, so it ended up being an amazing first of all opportunity, but an amazing experience in general. Yeah. Like I remember walking our first show at Stubbs, walking out onto I was on a riser. Johnny was in the middle. I was on a riser with DJ Sid, who I have this giant rack of percussion, and he has his like turntables right next to me, and we're sharing. There's a light behind me that's fucking hot, cause like these bigger lights, I don't know what it is, but they just feel so hot on stage. I'm sweating, and I like my skin's burning. His skin's burning.
It's like a heater.
It felt like a heater. Absolutely, that's exactly what it felt. So we're playing, and we're like, we start the first song, and we're in it, dude.
Wow.
For an hour and like probably everything went by so quickly, and I don't even remember some of it because I was so in it at the time. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to experience whatever it was in the moment.
Yeah,
playing, and I took some GoPro videos that I've posted throughout that time, but that I just remember the feeling. It was like, yo, I can't see anybody out there, but it goes all the way to the, it sold out two nights.
Wow.
Both nights were incredible shows.
Wow.
Incredible. That feeling that I'm playing for, I don't know, I don't know how much Stubbs holds, but whatever the sold out Stubbs is, two nights. And I was like, yo, this shit is crazy. And I prepped my ass off for this.
Yeah.
And we're enjoying it now.
Right.
And it's just, let's go out there and have fucking fun.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
You knew that you were so deserving and you earned it. Because you put it to work.
I put it at that point. 100%. Yeah. 100%. Okay, so that leads to, like, that happens in 2019. COVID happens 5 months later.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in October 2019. COVID happens in March of 2020. So whatever that time is. I get called for another percussion gig in Canada. My buddy Daniel Watson, Andrew Schindler, Matt... and Matt Weatherly, we all got called to go do this like, kind of like a Vegas show.
Okay.
Right. So we're the house band for this Gloria Estefan, like this huge Latin production.
Uh-huh.
Dancers, singers, we're the band. So I get called to play percussion again. I was like, well, I've done this before.
Right. Yeah.
I've done it at kind of the highest level at my, you know, in my career. I was like, yeah, we can handle this. And it was all Latin percussion, which was even more of like, I got to start learning how to do this. So I'm digging deeper into congas. I'm digging deeper into timbales and all this other stuff. That goes well. We had a blast. Then COVID literally happens 2 weeks after I get back from Canada.
Wow.
And I'm like, fuck.
Now what?
Now, literally, now what? So during COVID, I was like, well, I got to do something. Mm-hmm. I set up this whole schedule for me, which I was living with my ex-fiance at the time, mm-hmm. Anna. And I set up this whole schedule and I'm gonna practice 8 hours a day. I'm going to work out and I'm going to practice it. Nothing's going to stop. Nothing's going to change. As a matter of fact, I have more time to get better.
Right.
There's no distractions now.
Yeah.
Come back, eat, go back to the shed. Come back, eat, spend time with Anna, go back to the shed. Work out super early in the morning. That's where that begins to, you know, kind of like become a problem.
Yeah.
Because now that there's nothing to do, she wants to spend time with me, but I'm like trying to work.
Right.
And that's another story. Yeah, but okay, so I developed this whole thing. I end up calling my mentor, Fausto. Mm-hmm. I was like, dude, I've done two pretty significant percussion gigs. I'm ready to learn this shit for real.
Yeah.
And during COVID, I transcribed his solo on Stevie Wonder's O2 concert. It's a whole DVD. He did a solo on Spain and I transcribed it verbatim. I could play it at speed and do all that stuff. My technique was trash. Obviously, I just started learning, but I sent it to him. And I was like, yo, I'm ready to start. And he goes, holy shit, dude, you did this? I was like, yeah, I want to play. I want to figure this out.
Yeah.
And he was like, let's do it. He started. And then I also did the drums portion too. So Stanley Randolph's a drummer on that record, on that live record with him. I transcribed that drum solo too. And I showed him, I played him both. And he goes, holy shit. Okay. Hell yeah, let's do it.
Wow.
So that, like, that was... So that becomes the time where 2.5 or whatever, how many years it's been since that moment that I've been studying with him and he's been my mentor for real.
Wow.
Now. That's when that mentorship started. Yeah. And then on the drum set side, I needed a teacher. So I called Steve Lyman, who's in New York, an incredible jazz drummer. I mean, just incredible teacher. I spent 2 years with him just nonstop studying throughout the pandemic and even out of the pandemic. So that's
all your leveling up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's an entire year at the end of, or in the middle, I'm listening to Rogan and I'm listening to all these podcasts throughout the time while I'm practicing. And Rogan says, hey, I'm moving to Austin. And I go, oh shit, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder what's going to happen. Who's coming? Turns out Tony and Red Band are interested in coming too. So in December of 2020, Gary he hasn't played any shows. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's played any shows all year long. Decides to come out and play. They do like 4 days straight or 4 or 5 days straight at Antone's every night. They do a show. Rogan brought Tony and Red Band to one of those shows because they were interested in coming. And it was like, yo, you have to, like, he was telling you got to see this band. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. He brings them over to them. You know, they're all hanging in the green room upstairs afterwards. And Tony approaches John and was like, hey, I'm moving here. I'm bringing a podcast. I usually have a band on my podcast, but they're not coming with me. Would you be interested in putting a band together? Great. John's like,
done.
Yeah. John's like, well, yeah, fuck yeah, let's do it. Cool. So that was maybe December 5th. It was the first week of December. We have an entire month before the first show in Austin at Antone's. So throughout that, like, I don't really know what's going on. This is like, this is what I learned after the fact.
Right.
So before that first show, it was Sunday, January 3rd, because January 4th was the first day that we played. January 3rd, I'm chilling at the house with Anna. I'm literally taking a shit on the toilet, scrolling through my phone, and John's story pops up, and he had the first poster of Kill Tony. And I'm like, what the is this dude? Is he playing Kill Tony? So I messaged him. I was like, bro, are you playing Kill Tony? He goes, yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I was like, oh shit, do you I didn't tell him I was a fan or anything.
This is when scrolling on Instagram is good.
While taking a shit. Yeah. So, when we all do it, guys. You know we fucking do it. Keep doing it. It might work out for you.
Might work out. Yeah.
So, I'm sitting there and I do that. I would message him and he messaged me back like, yeah, I'm playing the show. So, I know the show. I'm a fan. So, I was like, yo, do you mind if I like just help tech, like bring your shit in? He goes,
and
no.
This is still COVID when things are kind of opening up, kind of closed. People were still.
It's 2021, low. January yeah. of 2021. Things are like.
The second wave of COVID had just hit. And
yeah.
Or like, should we go? Should we not?
100%. Yeah. So it's everybody's still wearing masks. Like some venues are open, some are not. Mm-hmm. Gigs I have, like, they're not fully coming out yet.
Right.
So I'm not really playing.
Yeah.
So I texted him, like, I have time. I can come and help you bring in your stuff. And he goes, nah, fuck that, dude. Bring your percussion stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
I've been practicing this. Oh yeah. Hell yeah. Great. He goes, yeah, no, I don't really know what this is going to be. Nobody's getting paid. We're just gonna have a good time. Fantastic. So he tells me to show up at a certain time. Of course I show up early. Cause I get,
check out the scene.
Absolutely.
Layout. Yeah.
We've played at Antone's so many times before. I know who runs sound. Shout out to Miles running sound at Antone's. I show up early. Come bring in all my shit. John shows up a couple, 10 minutes after me. We're hanging, we're shooting the shit. Tony walks in from the front, and I've never met him before. And I'm like, oh,
first
shit.
First interaction.
Okay, yes. So he walks in, he's with his girl, and I think Red Band was with him. He sees us because John's standing right next to me. He walks over to us and he looks me in the eye and goes, hi, I'm Tony Hinchcliffe. We're gonna have a great night tonight. And I was like, oh shit. Like, I was so nervous.
Yeah.
But after, he looked me in my eye, his piercing blue eyes, looked me in my eye and goes, hey, this is who I am. We're going to have a great night tonight. All right. You set the standard.
Right.
All my nerves, all whatever I was feeling inside, all went away.
Yeah.
You made it so comfortable. We're just going to have fun.
Yeah.
And it's what happened.
Wow.
It was the funniest thing I've ever been a part of. For sure. And that was just the first time.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this?
There's some magic happening here.
For sure. So, and that wasn't even like, that's not even the iteration of the band that became the band.
Mm.
So like, that was January 4th, the week after, same band, I'm on percussion, do another taping. The third week, January 18th, the drummer and the bass player couldn't make it. They had another gig somewhere. So John texts me and goes, hey, you're on drums tonight. Bring your drums. Fantastic. I know how this goes.
Yeah.
I'll bring my stuff.
Right.
It was great. I show up, start setting up.
So you're basically subbing at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. So I get there, John's there, and he also, like, since there's no other chordal or melodic instruments, he hires Matt Mueling and D Manis to come and play with us. So I was, fuck yeah, great. Obviously, we're all friends. We've all played together. We start setting up and doing sound check, and I remember Tony walking up on stage. I don't think I've ever told anybody this, but I for some reason I remember it now. He walked up on stage and he goes, oh shit, Michael Gonzalez is on drums, an actual Mexican drummer for the Mexican Drum Off. Oh, this is gonna be fucking great. And I was like, wow. Actually, yeah, because the previous drummer Joel is also Mexican, and that's where like the Mexican Drum Off started. So, it became this whole bit in the show. And he's like, well, this is perfect.
Uh-huh.
Right? And that night ended up going so well that he was like, all right, this is my band. Yeah.
Wow.
Us four.
All by January 18th. Chance.
All by me sitting on the fucking toilet, taking a shit, looking at my phone.
Wow.
It's crazy. But that goes like all the work that I had done before then. Like if he didn't call me to play percussion and start learning percussion, all that shit, I don't think I would have been even offered the opportunity to come and play perc on a show. Like, come hang out with us.
Right. You earned your way in because you've put in all the work. All of that was just leveling yourself up along the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because you said yes to that. That gives me chills.
Yeah.
The first time you told me that story, I was like in tears.
It's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it's just everything that you've ever worked for coming together. And even at that, like, you still didn't know at the time what the show was going to be because it was still COVID.
Yeah.
So you're like, is this really going to take off? Is it not? You're still just participating in something cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little bit of momentum.
Yeah. But it's also, yeah, everything was like pushing forward. But also growing up, I was like, my dad always had, we always watched comedy movies.
Mm-hmm.
I was a stand-up fan since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Rob, Matt, we all used to listen to Dane Cook and Eddie Murphy and Dave Chappelle. Like, my first intro to stand-up was Richard Pryor and Robin Williams.
Wow.
Like, my dad has those records. I would listen to those records, vinyl records.
Right.
Like,
the real deal.
The real shit.
Yeah.
Live from the Sunset Strip. Like, I listened to that when I was early teens.
Yeah.
I don't think I was even going through puberty. You know what I'm saying? Like, so comedy has always been a part of my life.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed making people laugh. I always wanted to be the funny guy. My dad's the same way. So it's just a blessing that I get to my two favorite things in the world. I get to do them both at the same time.
Right.
Once a week.
Yeah. You could have never planned that because you think drummer, well, my biggest stage would be playing for a musician. Right?
100%. Like,
and then now totally different direction.
Completely different. I would have never guessed that I'd be doing something like this.
Yeah.
Insane.
And then totally took off. I know that you all played the HEB
summer
for New Year's.
Yep.
And that was like a big, crazy, sold out, all the things. It's
so much
fun. Happening, right? And the next two big platforms are going to be in LA and New York.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of prep happening for that.
Trying.
What have you found? We've got maybe about 4 or 5 more minutes.
Yeah.
What have you found now that you have this platform? Mm-hmm. It's been crazy because
it has.
And you've had some, we talked about one theft, but there was another theft.
Oh, dude.
That you've like overcome and just, more stories.
People like to steal
two.
Shit.
Yeah.
But
you still like made it happen and you are where you are today. And watching you have this success, it feels like it's been overnight, but we just dissected all of that. It was definitely not overnight.
No, it wasn't.
And then now you having this levels of success and you're like, people want my autograph? Like, what?
Yeah. All this is so surreal to me.
Yeah.
It's a little overwhelming, you know, but I love people and it's crazy to think that this has gotten so big that people are flying from Scotland, UK, New Zealand, Australia, all over the world to come and sit in the standby line. They don't even have tickets.
Wow.
To come and sit in the standby line at the mothership for a Kill Tony show. That blows my... So the least I can do is when somebody comes, hey, I'm going to talk to you.
Yeah.
Let's
interact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make the most of it and I'm going to work as hard as I can. And I love being on the show and I love all the Kill Tony family. And it's just a blessing to be a part of that entire thing. And it's just surreal that all these things are happening, that I'm going to get to play these arenas coming up. Billy Joel has a residency there once a month at Madison Square Garden.
Crazy.
I'm going to play the same stage as Billy Joel, as Van Halen.
That's
fucking
my mind.
I mean, insane.
Surreal.
And in the Forum, the Eagles, like,
yeah.
I mean, the biggest of the big.
Yeah.
We're going to
be there.
Yeah, we're all going to be there. And that scared me for a little bit because like even thinking myself as like all my idols that have played those venues, I mean, their level of skill and talent are, I mean, by far where I'm at right now. So what do I need to do to feel like I'm getting there?
Mm.
That's the mindset that I have right now.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not there.
Right.
So, and I'm not going to have time in the next 5 to 6 months to get to that level.
Uh-huh.
So what do I need to do to just have my mindset mentally prepared to feel like I'm supposed to be there.
So that imposter syndrome doesn't take over. You're like, I'm here.
Dude.
I've worked for it. I've earned it. What is the vision for your for, because now we got some merch coming
out. Yeah, I got some merch coming out.
I'm so excited. Yeah. The logo looks good.
Yeah.
But what is your plan as a drummer in the industry?
In the comedy industry? Or just in the industry?
As a drummer in the industry as a whole, entertainment in general.
Okay. My plan. Well, also, like, this is giving me an opportunity to teach, I think, too. Like, I like sharing information that has been shared. Since I started, I've taken so many lessons with professional, like, amazing, killing professional musicians, or drummers and musicians. I've learned so much. I think without any of those lessons, I wouldn't be where I am right now. Skillfully, knowledge-wise on the instrument, knowledge-wise in music, I want to be able to do that as well. So I've, with the merch thing, and like we're launching a website pretty soon. I'll have lessons up there too for people who want to study with me, and I wanna be able to have like drum camps. Cause here's the thing too. I like to consider myself an athlete. I work out every day. Uh-huh. I'm pretty good at it. But there's a thing that happens on a gym where it's like, it's a lot of it is like community workouts, right, like people working out and grinding and doing hard shit together. Yeah. Drums is kind of like that, but it's always like from like somebody teaching somebody else. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have like a coach vibe where it's like, hey, we're all getting together to like chop out and get and grow together. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what my vision is.
Sweat equity. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Love that. Music doesn't have that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You'll combine those two.
Absolutely. And the thing is like the drummer hang in general is like in any city that I've ever been to is like has a strong community. Mm-hmm. So I want to make it even stronger by, you know, bringing guys that, you know, will come in from out of town and be like, hey, let's shed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll get a couple guys together. We'll all get together and play drums. But I want to make that more of a community. And I feel like I can do that now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's always just been something in my head. It's like, man, why aren't there more like guys getting together to play, but like not just to like kind of show off and fucking like, hey, look how good I am. No, but actually growing.
Get in the grind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, hey, how did you do this? Show me how you did this.
No smoke and mirrors.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Like, let's get into how you became that and let's all like figure out how to grow together.
Yeah.
That's a vision that I've had for a while. And I'm actually like working on some like hand stuff and pad work that I want to put out, like exercises for guys to, you know, develop their chops.
Yeah.
So after I do that, I want to make videos and sheet music to go along with it, and then start having like not drum camps, but, you know, little
get on set.
Yes. Get togethers to have guys come in. Here's some stuff that I've been working on that's helped me. Let's if you're interested, come hang and let's do it together. That's kind of where I'm at right now. Yeah. For right now, at least.
Yeah. Well, that's so exciting. I'm excited because whatever you put your mind to, it's come true, whether it's taken 5 years, 13 years, or even if it's going to be 20 years.
Right.
We don't know, but it's definitely going to come together. And just as a family member, I'm so proud of you, Mike.
Thank you so much
for what you've accomplished.
Yeah.
Really just staying humble in the process. But we are going to do a round two.
Tell me, there's a lot.
Into the relationship side.
Ooh, shit.
Which we'll have lots to talk about at that point. But anyway. Love you so much.
I love you too.
So proud.
Thank you for having me, for real.
We'll be back for round two.
Come on, round two. That goes by.